You are listening.
Listening to Southend.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of Sleep and Thrive, the podcast dedicated to helping you unlock and understand the power of a good night's sleep. Here to help us do that is Dan Everson, sleep coach. Dan, how are you?
Super duper. Thank you very much.
Super duper. How did you sleep when you were a kid?
Oh,
I slept.
I don't want to use that one because I used that joke before, but I slept like a teenager last night.
Yeah.
Went to bed too late. Dragged out of bed too early by my mum.
Oh, God, I remember the teenage years. I used to have this real hang up because my dad used to wake me up for school and he used to come in and he used to never do it like in a pleasant, nice way, like, you've got to wake up. Shout at the top of his voice, you got to get up, go to school. I was like, it was scarring. It really was. But yeah, teenage sleep is a thing,
yeah.
Or a lack of a thing, really. Does it happen?
A dad thing as well, because I remember I got vivid memories of my dad reaching boiling point pretty early in the morning.
I've asked you at least once. Have you?
This is your final warning. This is the first one.
Get up.
I've been screaming for the last half an hour. I didn't hear that. I was enjoying my dream.
Teenage dream. We won't go into those. No. Or will we? I don't know.
Isn't that a song? It must be a song.
I'm sure I heard that one before. So we're going to talk about teenage sleep, not teenage dreams. Or we could talk about that later. But the lack of it is a thing. I remember being a teenager and sleep was probably the last thing on the agenda. But it's an important thing.
Yeah.
An important time in your life.
Yeah. But like most teenagers, it's not a priority.
No.
Whilst we can speak about it and you can understand how important it is another thing to navigate as a teenager, along with hormones and learning stuff and relationships and just finding your direction in the world and what you want to do and how you want to feel about things and everything else that's going on. It's like my wife says as a teacher, it's one of the most challenging, it's probably the most challenging time of anyone's life as a teenager, because you have societally got to do so many things, you're fighting against so many other things, hormones and other pressures.
It's a scary time.
Something always has to give, and it invariably does. And there's not a teenager out there that hasn't, including ourselves, you know, we've made many mistakes, and we could, and that's where the time you should be making these mistakes.
Still making them.
Yeah. Oh, damn it, man child, I am. So, yeah, it really is a thing. And my experience is the same as yours. And, you know, my twin brother, identical twin, and him and I, you know, it was just getting screamed at because we struggled to get out of bed. And my development was slightly later. So I remember going to college and just the college ringing up my house, home phone, you know, is Dan there? Can he, any time he's going to come into college today? You know, we've got a lecture at 9 o'clock. It's now 10 o'clock.
Oh, dear.
Of course, you're in trouble, you know, that, and we can come on to that in a second. You know, that caused trouble. That caused stress for my mum. It caused stress for me, having to then get ripped out of sleep and get dressed and get to college, and then having to miss important things. It added more stress. Then getting spoken to, you know,
you get the telling off.
Yeah, and so, but when you understand what we're going to speak about in a second, you know, that just that awareness piece is hugely important for parents, for teenagers, for teachers and educational leaders. It's so important to understand what happens and why sleep changes for a teenager. When you understand that, and when you put it into a perspective of as an adult, you go, oh yeah, imagine that. Imagine the same thing happening now as an adult.
Yeah,
you would be in a lot of trouble. So
it's interesting, because I think we can all remember what it was like being a teenager. But then as a parent, do you think about that when you're telling your kid to get up and go to school? And when I was young, I had to do it, so you have to do it too.
100%. And this is going to be something I was going to speak about, so cover it now. It is huge. It is a huge, you know, like you said, par for the course, or, you know, it's something that you experienced, and so therefore your children will experience it, and their children will experience it too, because you were screamed at and told you're a lazy teenager, get out of bed, you're wasting the day, you're wasting life, you have to get on and crack on. And so that was a negative experience which you remembered and is imprinted upon you, so that when you become a parent, you will say and do those things with your children, and they will pass it on. And here we have this stigma attached, and lazy teenagers label, and you know, for many generations that has come through to where we are now. And hopefully now we're understanding about teenage sleep more, and the science is there and the data, and we can start to grow awareness so that we can become more accepting and accommodating of teenagers, certainly as a parent, maybe not societally or as in education settings, but certainly as a parent or as a teenager themselves. We can break that cycle, you know.
Yeah.
I understand that you're really tired. You have to get up, or you have to go try and do these things, because you can't necessarily say, you have to go to bed a bit earlier because you're definitely going to need more sleep in the morning and not be able to wake up. But that's not how teenage sleep works. And so all we have to do is just try and to support our children and help them to understand what's happening and help them navigate through with a few little tweaks here and there, because generally speaking, what we need to do, we cannot do. We cannot say, fine, go to bed 2 or 3 hours later than you normally would. Wake up 2 or 3 hours later than you normally would. Because
it's not easy to just do.
Going to happen that, yeah. And not get the phone call from the college or the school and saying, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Where's your man or girl? They're not here.
I haven't seen them.
They've missed register. So first and foremost, it's important to break the cycle as a parent or as an educational or anyone that supports teenagers to understand and to be more accepting and accommodating and help support them through that period. If we can do that, if nothing else, if we just did that, we would move
at least
on.
Shifts the barrier and breaks the cycle,
yeah,
for the next generation,
because we all experienced what our farm, my dad or my mum thrown or
get
poured
up.
Oh yeah, I remember getting poured water on my head, my mum. thanks mum.
Morning.
I'll pass that on to my kids, don't worry.
Hey, it worked. Yeah. So let's look about the science of it then. So when you're obviously a baby, you sleep like a baby. When you're an adult, you sleep like a baby. But there's that bit in the middle where we don't sleep like a baby. What happens when you're a teenager?
Okay.
As well as all the other stuff.
So without taking you back to your teenage years and mine, in general, what happens, right? And I can say this because I've got a boy of 10 years old. So around 8 to 10, my daughter's 8, my son's 10. So around 8 to 10 years old, and this is science, not just my experience of them two being that age.
Been watching them all night.
Yeah. I know exactly what time you fell asleep. They normally go to bed around 8 p.m., for instance, right? Plus or minus 30 minutes. And they sleep around 11 hours at their age. That's about 11. For an 8 to 10-year-old, you're talking about 10 to 11 hours.
That sounds lovely.
Give or take.
Oh, can you imagine that?
And so they'll wake up around 7 a.m. So 8 p.m. plus or minus 30 minutes, 7 a.m. plus or minus about 11 hours. So get about 11 hours sleep. And that happens, generally speaking, you know, every single night. Except certain periods of the week or times of the year. They sleep for about 11 hours and they go to sleep. Very predictable that time. Now, what happens when, not necessarily a teenager, but certainly when they start to have changes within their body and brain, they start to go through developmental changes, you know, puberty and a number of different other biological genetic changes which happen to all of us. We cannot control when they happen, how long they last, but they happen to everyone. Of course, they start at different times in different children, but they will last a number of years.
Mm.
Now, this is a genetic biological process that has to happen and will happen to everyone in order to develop their brains and brain maturation and a number of other processes within our bodies and brains that move, sort of transition from a childhood into our young adult lives. And sleep is one of the huge areas which changes. And so what happens is they have a shift in their circadian rhythm, which we all understand is, you know, our own preferences for sleep and wake due to the rising and falling of the sun. And through this period of change, their sleep is fast-forwarded, or their circadian rhythm shifts forward.
Okay.
About 2 or 3 hours. Right. And, you know, you can call it, it's known as a delayed phase sleep, wake syndrome. And so
you really can't put your teenage child to bed at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
It ain't going to happen.
So you delay, as it's called, delayed phase, they delay the period they fall asleep by 2 or 3 hours. So you're sending, you know, young child to bed at, say, 8:30 p.m. and they're going through the changes, they're not tired. They don't want to go to bed. They don't want to go to sleep. But, and that's not because they're being defiant. It's because their bodies are sending signals and chemicals or not. So therefore, they're delaying their sleep. Not they, the brain is delaying sleep, and the process of sleep is being delayed by 2 or 3 hours. So when you put them to bed at 8:30 and wonder why at 10:30 they're still reading, writing, who knows, scrolling, screening, doing whatever, or not, essentially not asleep, or struggling to fall asleep, building anxiety, building stress in their own, in the parent as well as the child, and of course it goes into a bit of a vicious cycle. But their sleep is delayed by 2 or 3 hours. They're going to bed at normal time and finding they're falling asleep a lot later. So they go to sleep a lot later, and then they're still requested to wake up because of, you know, societal pressures. They have to get up and get dressed for school. The parents are going out to work, and they have to take them and drive them, commute, etc. So they're having to wake up early. And what happens, they want to delay, again, their wake time. So they delay the sleep time by 2 or 3 hours, they delay their wake time by 2 or 3 hours. So instead of going to bed at, say, 8:30 p.m. and waking up at 7:30 a.m., as my children do, because they're close to 10 years old or 11 years old, what happens is they want to go to bed around 11 p.m., 10:30, 11, and they need, again, 9 to 11 hours of sleep. So they're going to bed, say they're going to bed at 11 p.m, then they're going to get 10 hours. They're going to want to wake up at 9 a.m. Now, school,
that
gates
gonna,
open at 8:30.
Ain't going to fly, is it?
and that's just in our country. There, you know, in other countries, school start times are earlier and the commute times are even longer. But just generally speaking, 11 p.m. to bed, wake up at 9 a.m. Now, whilst one can happen, the second one, the wake time can't, for a lot, you know, number
most,
of reasons.
Most schools are starting earlier than that, aren't they?
So, of course, the children are then getting woke up 2 or 3 hours earlier than that. Let me just give you, for instance, before we sort of talk about that in a bit more. If school start times in America are earlier, and they're earlier because of a number of different factors, but they are, for instance, 80% of schools in the US start before 8:15. 80% of them start before 8:15 in the morning. 50% of that 80% start before 7:20 a.m.
Wow. Now,
these
that
schools,
early,
again, yes, they're rural and more rural than we are in the UK, and therefore the commute times are longer. So 7:20 start time, their commute, the buses will pick them up in these rural areas around 5:45, 5:30 in the morning. So they're waking up at 5 in the morning to get dressed and ready to get to the bus stop at 5:45 for the hour commute, or maybe 16 a.m. in the morning for a commute to school, to be ensure they're on their time.
Every day.
And that's and you're waking them up. I've already said 9 a.m. say, and generally speaking, would be, or 8 a.m. would be a better time to wake them up. You wake them at
five hours.
So we're talking 3 hours earlier than they want to get up. You're waking them up 3 hours earlier. Expect them to be courteous, kind, respectful, well-mannered, positive, ready to function, ready to thrive, eat the right foods, move their bodies.
Yeah.
That would not happen to an adult. You're not going to.
I wouldn't
feel
like that.
You wouldn't do that. But we're expecting
5:30 in the morning. Yeah.
We're expecting our young adults or our teenagers to perform this way, and that's not one off. This is day after day after day for weeks and weeks of a term, and wonder why their behaviours are not great. Their academic achievement is under par. You know, they're feeling and presenting, you know, like you would if you were woken up at, say, 3:15. Imagine if waking you up like 3 hours earlier than you'd like to.
Yeah.
If you get up at 6 for a number of reasons, you get up at 6 or 7, waking you up at 3 and 4 in the morning every single morning, weeks and weeks, 5 days a week for weeks on end, there's going to be an impact upon your health. There's going to be an impact upon your mental and your emotional state.
Yeah. And sounds like torture.
And you factor into that relationships, learning new things, navigating the hormones and chemicals that you do as a teenager. Throw all those things in as well, societal pressures.
Yeah.
You're just gonna, again, this is why my wife says it's like the worst period of a time for these children. It's such a challenging time.
I mean, so that's an extreme case, but like over here, we're still, I mean, you see buses going at 7 a.m.
Yeah, we're still talking. I just said that 11 till 9 would be an ideal time, biologically speaking, for a child, and yet we're getting them up at 7, say.
To
then have to sort of have their breakfast, make sure they're fueled, get their stuff, and be ready to leave at appropriate time. And still, we're still waking up 2 hours early, even on a non-extreme example. So teenagers have it difficult, and it's worth being aware and understanding that. Imagine if you have been woke up 2 or 3 hours earlier than you'd like to every single morning. You're not going to be the best version of yourself, but we're expecting our teenagers to, after we've screamed and shouted at them and poured water on their head. So we're compounding the problem, and we need to try and help and support to navigate them through. For instance, there's a study, and there's lots of studies done on this, and there's lots of surveys done. 70% of parents think the teenagers are getting enough sleep, but the data shows that about 15% of teenagers are getting 50. Enough sleep. 9 to 11 hours of sleep is enough sleep.
Yeah.
Most teenagers don't get that. Nowhere near. And if they do, what they're doing before they get sleep and what they're doing after they get sleep, again, is not conducive to good quality sleep. So not only they might be getting a 10-hour sleep in duration, but the quality's not there because
they'll be on the phone before they get sleep.
And there's, you know, stresses of worrying about exams or learning new things or relationships or social media, and in the mornings they're, you know, hitting more screens and maybe hitting some sugary cereal. So it's worth understanding there's a disconnect between what parents understand as enough sleep and what their children are getting versus what they're actually getting. And I know parents aren't going to be putting electrodes on their kids every night to understand what their sleep's like, but there's simple ways you can track sleep, or at least track some parts of sleep to understand it. But really, it's just having the awareness that about 15% of teenagers are getting enough sleep, which leaves 85% of teenagers in school, especially secondary school, that are not getting enough sleep each night.
Undernourished in their sleep.
And we know from the data and evidence and science around how we learn and how memory consolidation works, you need good sleep before you learn, you need good sleep after you've learned, so you can consolidate those memories from the short to long term sort of savings bank memory stick in your brain.
Yeah.
But if you underslept before you learn and underslept after you learn, then you're not going to remember and recall and bank that stuff as well as you should.
It's interesting because I'm sure I remember hearing that there's lots of studies that suggest you learn more early in the morning, and that's why they seem to push the start times earlier and earlier. But obviously it makes sense that if you're tired and you're underslept, you're not going to learn, you're not going to progress in the way that you need to and take in what they're trying to teach you in the first place.
No. Like I said, go back to the adult example. You wake yourself or me up at 3 or 4 in the morning and say, "Don't worry, the best hour or two is just ahead of you. Just ahead of you."
Is it really? Yeah. Right. Are you sure about
it? It's not going to be. Oh, yeah. It's not going to be. I mean, I'll certainly feel worse in the afternoon, but right now I'm still horrifically underslept and it's still dark outside. And why are you putting water on my head? It's,
yeah.
The studies around learning, yes, there's lots of studies to show different learning evidence-based scenarios where you learn certain things in certain environments at certain times, and there's lots of tests around those, but there's not probably one particular test that says the best time to learn is this, because everyone's got different sleep needs and everyone's got different chronotypes, as we mentioned, which means they'll be awake and alert and creative and you know, ready to learn
some
at different
early,
times of the day.
Later.
Exactly, if they're early birds or night owls, I spoke about before. So everyone is different, but it's what is understood and what is broadly known is if they're well slept before you learn something and then you sleep well after you learn, then you can recall that learning. For instance, they did control groups of 8 hours sleep, 4 hours sleep, had a learning like a maths, and then one group will sleep 8 hours after and one group will only sleep 4 hours after. Next morning, test them again. And they did that for a number of nights for a number of students, you know, different tests, comprehension, mathematics, whatever. It was always the same. The group that slept the longest recalled and remembered the better and the most. And there's lots of studies on students, and it's well known that, you know, getting good sleep before, getting good sleep after is important, which is why, and we're going away from teenagers necessarily here, but when you talk about exams, and teenagers are cramming, they, you know, do like a cram the night before. Mm. So the night before I need to recall data, I'm going to have very little sleep. you know, or over the nights leading up to an exam, you're going to have a compounding less and less sleep every night so that you can try and cram this data in. That's not how it works. That's not what the studies and the evidence show, yet we still have teenagers that are preparing for exams in that
reading
way.
Textbooks at like 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah, it's crazy. And going back to sort of teenage sleep, we want our teenagers, we want our children, we want these, you know, young adults. We want them to be the best version of themselves. We want them to thrive and be positive and enjoy education and learn things and navigate themselves through this period. And yet we're not supporting them. We're not helping them because societally, with regards to commuting, with regards to school start times, we're making, you know, they're getting up earlier and earlier. Mm-hmm. And we're finding that, of course, they're not achieving or they're not performing at their best. And so this really is an awareness piece around if we want them to perform better, if we're in an education setting and your whole mission is to improve the mental resilience, the academic achievement, and set these young adults up for adulthood, then why are we ripping them out of their beds?
Wake up 4 hours earlier.
3 or 4 hours earlier to then to start them to learn and commute to school. And this is starting to get onto a bit of opinion, a bit of a crusade of mine, so I'll stop this. But it's really important to understand that if we want the best for our children, then we need to look at how we approach the times we educate them.
Justice for lions. I feel like that is a
yeah
a campaign we need.
It's crazy.
It's so true though, because I mean the whole goal of going to school and sending your children into education is to give them the best possible start in life, and yet we all start them so early that they don't get what they need and get the rest and the sleep that clearly their bodies need. So what can we do, obviously, as a parent or even as a teenager, what can you do to improve that scenario, other than obviously campaigning at your school to start a bit later? How can you support the best, make the best of that time when you're asleep?
One, don't rip them out of their beds on the weekends. Because what most teenagers do is they will try and pay catch off that sleep up. Debt from the week at the weekends. They'll lay in bed till 12, 1, 2 in the afternoon. I know I did it. Many do it before and since then.
Yeah.
And as parents or as adults, as guardians, whatever, we are going to say, get up, you're wasting the weekend, you're wasting life, you know, we've got to go, we've got to be here, we've got to do this, we've got to do that.
Yeah.
And so if we want to support these teenagers, they're going to struggle to pay off the sleep debt regardless, but allowing them to sleep at the weekends and catch up on that sleep that's vitally important is something we can do to support and have it. And it's going to be difficult. It's tough as a family unit and you have things you want to do or you have other commitments at the weekend. It's really important for their own emotional and mental well-being that they are allowed to rest and sleep when they can, because we're not letting them do it for 5 days a week, so let's let them do it for two. understand and aware that they will want to go to bed later. It's not they want to, their bodies and their genetics and their biological changes mean that their processes do not start, they do not have the triggers and the sensations and the feelings and the chemicals and the hormones to want to go to sleep or to rest or to start winding down the same time as they used to. They've gone from a 10-year-old that was, you know, bath and bed and routine
story
up to
time
8:30. At 8:00. All of a sudden, yeah. You know, they're grunting and answering back, and they want to go to bed at 11:30.
They want to die hard with you. Yeah.
They want to stay up with us. And of course, parents, that's why, again, parents want to have their own time together, or, you know, parents, however they co-parent or parent together. Parents want their own time. Adults want their time for themselves, away from sometimes having that to be the parent so they can switch off. But if the child wants to be up until 10:30, 11:00 at night, that's not necessarily going to fit their narrative.
Yeah.
So it's right, off to bed early, or at least go to bed with your TV and do that in your own time away from me. So it's just about supporting them in the evening to know that their wind down will start later and they'll go to sleep later, and support that. And also in the mornings to just be a bit kinder and supportive. Have that conversation. There's a great resource online at the sleep charity. It's called Teen Sleep Hub. There is a downloadable PDF. There's a number of different things you can lock on there, and we can speak about some of those in a second as things you can do. But there's some stuff on there which is really good as a parent to read, and also as a child, as a teenager, to share with them, even if it's just one page of the big document, just in little areas, which we can speak about in a second, just to help tweak and give them understanding. Because it doesn't matter if you're a parent and you understand this, you're on board with it, you know, trying to push that elephant up the stairs.
It's a difficult thing to understand. This is something else to learn as you,
so,
in your youth.
Share it with them and you know, and share it with the school. Ask the school if there's something that they're they're teaching their teaching the children and helping them to be aware of. So that's how we can support. And as a teenager themselves, or as a parent of a teenager, just things like, yes, they go to bed a bit later, so we can't necessarily change that.
Yeah.
But what we can change is what they do before they go to sleep. So like us as adults, we've already spoke about this before, and as anyone, you want to have a wind-down schedule. If they are Snapchatting, social mediaing, bright light screens, gaming, whatever it is, surfing, that's not necessarily going to be conducive, again, to quality of sleep. If we're going to say, okay, they're going to go a bit later, but they still have to get up for school, their recommended 9 to 11 hours is actually more like, I think the average for a teenager is about 9 hours. So 8 or 9 hours, I'm picking that out of the air now, but I know it's a couple of hours less than they should.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they're already only getting 2 hours less than they need, we need to ensure that if their duration is going to be 2 hours less, then their quality needs to be even higher than it currently is. And some of the things that teenagers do before sleep is going to hurt the quality.
Yeah.
So fine, they need to go a bit later. Fine, it's going to be a struggle to get up in the morning, but let's at least try and support that what they do before bed is going to improve the quality of their sleep. So again, curfews on screens, as ugly as that sounds, is something which we can do. Certainly encouraging things that are going to help them to wind down before bed, because their brains are no different to the babies or young children or as adults. We need to send a signal to our brain that we are now preparing our body and brain for sleep.
Yeah, the wind
that
down.
Needs to come at some stage. versus switching the lights off and going to bed.
But I guess that's important to sort of make a part of the education process, in that, you know, I think if more schools, maybe more parents educated their children and they enter into their teens about the importance of sleep and how their bodies are changing in that way, it might help, and it might make them feel better at the weekends.
Yeah.
That's what they could, you know, that the sleep bank idea and the fact that they are waking up so much earlier gives them the empowerment to take control of their...
Yeah, it's their difficult. Own. You know, like, I'd love to have, you know, a government-led public health campaign for sleep, for instance, or for teenage sleep at least, but public health campaigns cost money. Public health campaigns, mm-hmm. whilst the evidence is there to support it, it's not always going to hit the right note. We do need these education settings and organisations to get on board, as well as, you know, as parents and in society, to understand and grow this awareness, so that this becomes the general narrative within any setting, whether it be home or at school, that sleep's important. We need to prioritise sleep. We especially need to prioritise sleep for our teenagers, because they've got a lot on their plate. And if you want them to navigate that, you know, and be well adjusted at the end of it and not come out the back end of it with mental health concerns, which we understand that mental health, the beginnings and the starting of psychosis and things of that nature, whether it be depression, anxiety, stress-related mental health conditions, they are the prevalent and start in the teenage years. And so we need to support the children through, because what we do not want to see is an increase in those types of conditions due to a number of reasons, including sleep. It's going to be difficult. There are a number of schools in the States that changed their start times by an hour and saw increase in SAT scores by 26%, you know, and they were seen these schools were seen as like pioneers, you know, but whilst the data supported it, and it was amazing to see the academic achievement improvements in these students, it wasn't widespread. It went through, say, for instance, Minnesota, you know, as a state, it went through, you know, dozens and dozens of schools.
Yeah.
But it didn't stretch any further than that. You know, we see things like, certainly in the States with the data, because there are lots of children that go to school in the States. And I know we're moving towards that type of model now at 16 to 18, still staying in school.
Yeah.
Those teenagers are driving. And, of course, teenagers that are underslept, driving.
Driving at the same time,
there's a huge amount of car crashes or car accidents or vehicular accidents at that age group. And certainly in the States where they change the school times, the vehicle accidents reduced by, again, similar percentages, like 25%. For instance, ABS, you know, the anti-lock brake locking system that was revolutionary for cars to help control and steer a braking car, was like a revolutionary type of factor that came into the car industry. you know, worldwide, every car's got ABS now, you know, or at least sold to have that.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about 25% reduction in car accidents, 25% increase in academic achievements just through changing the start times. There are other factors I appreciate we're not talking about, but just alone, it's worth it.
In that study, it's plain to see how much is made.
It wasn't a fluke, like a one-off, like it was in Minnesota, in the one place, which I can't remember what it's called now.
In Estes, Minnesota,
it wasn't a fluke because they replicated it in a number of different other places with a similar sort of outcomes. So, yes, there's lots of barriers to why we can't change school start times in the UK. And this is, again, can get on a bit of a campaign, a bit of a crusade, so I'll stop on that one. But it's really important to understand.
I'm in your campaign.
That yes. If we're a school and education setting, that it's something we can look at, it's something worth exploring because the data does not lie. And even if you said, okay, we'll choose a small cohort of pupils, and for 4 weeks, we'll let them come into school 60 minutes later. On average, they'll get, I think, from the Minnesota, it was 43 minutes more sleep.
Yeah, you know? That's enough to make a pretty decent difference.
Yeah, which
that's an extra cycle at least.
Which is not trivial. You know, it's quite, and knowing the numbers that back that up with 25%, that's not a small number. It's huge. That's the difference between going to university and not. That's the difference between acing an exam and failing it. 25% is huge.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in today's markers of the, what's it called? Not GCSEs anymore, but the Super 8s or the Box 8, whatever it's called. We're talking 25% increase is taking you from, an old E to like an A.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So that's teenage sleep. Sort of.
It's teenage sleep in a nutshell. Justice for Lions. I'm in that campaign all day long. Dad, thanks so much. And I know that I think a lot of parents would find this useful, and hopefully a lot of teachers too. Are you available for school visits to chat to staff about the importance of teenage sleep?
I, of course, when I have a conversation with schools, you know, and I let them know what is the data, and most of them are open to share that around school start times, or at least they're open for me to share the information with the children to grow awareness. And yes, I'm up for that, talking to schools. Yes, of course, I'm up for increasing awareness to schools. The kids always love it when the parents are involved, because it's the parents that they need to convince. And so sitting in the school hall and during school hours and listening to me, they're like, great, I'm more aware of it, brilliant. But what we need to get on the board so is our parents to support, you know, to support us through that period.
Yeah, to share it with all of your parent friends.
Yeah, and some schools do have, and have held with me, evenings for parents to, you know, jump online or to come down in person to the school to listen to the stuff, some of the stuff I'm sharing with you.
Yeah,
so that we can support these kids.
Keep doing what you're doing, and hopefully teenagers will benefit from it and be able to achieve better, because they'll be better slept. I can't imagine how nice it would have been to not have had the rude awakening at least one day a week.
Imagine the test. Imagine running an experiment with parents and saying, right, you 10 parents of these 10 teenagers, you're going to wake up 2 or 3 hours earlier than you normally would do or would like to for the next 7 days. And on the back end of that, see how you feel.
Yeah.
Okay. Now add into that, you have to learn new things every day.
Meet
you
new
have
people.
To navigate relationships and commuting and exams and everything else. And so, you don't want to do something about that? Or are you just happy just to
keep doing that for the
keep
next
on doing what,
five, know? 6 years?
Yeah. So, I'm hoping change is upon us.
I hope so. Dan, thanks so much. Where can we find out more about you and all the stuff you're doing? And seek your advice on how to sleep and thrive.
On the internet, sleepandthrivecoach.com or .co.uk is where you can find the website and lots of information on there. Social media, all the links are on there. You can find out more and follow me and contact me in that way.
Excellent. Lovely. Dan, sleep well.
And thrive.
This podcast was brought to you by Southend City Radio. For more great podcasts and radio like this, visit southendcityradio.uk.